Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and one place that I've never been, but I've certainly been very curious about going to, but really never had any opportunity or the sense that an opportunity would ever arise to go to Cuba. I mean, it's right there. I've been to Florida like 4 times, and you can sort of think you can see it across the water, but it's been so off limits, and especially in the early years of my growing up, so politically and socially off limits, that, being American, it kind of never occurred to me that it would be a place, A, I'd be able to go to, or B, that I would be allowed to. But time passes, years pass, you start talking to people who go there through other countries, and now, a couple of weeks ago, Fidel Castro had that health scare, and people were thinking suddenly, oh my God, this may open up, the whole world may change down there within a few weeks or months. But someone who's had a lot more experience and a lot more visitation there and knows the place a heck of a lot better than, well, I do, or certainly a lot of Americans would imagine that they ever could, is Jack Kenny. Now, Jack is a photographer, and about only 10 years ago, he started wanting to photograph Cuba and went down there once and then again. And then again and again and again, and just fell in love, I guess, with the people and the culture and the land, and has been down there, I think, 40 times. So, of course, getting a sense of the people, of the place, and of the politics, and I thought especially with Cuba on the brink of changing to something else from what it's been for the past 5 or 6 decades, I think this is a perfect time to talk to photographer Jack Kenny and welcome him to Dave's Gone By. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Dave. Nice to be here.
Great. Great to have you here. Great to have you in America. How much of the time do you spend here, and how much of the time generally do you spend in Cuba?
Well, for the past 10 years, I've been going 4 to 5 times a year. Most trips are about 2 weeks. I've been a little longer a few times, but I have a business and a daughter here that I have to take care of, so I'm here more than I'm there, but I go as often as I can.
Now, when was the last time you were in Cuba?
I was there about 2 months ago, and I went down actually for my wedding. I married a Cuban woman who I've had a 6 or 7 year relationship with.
Congratulations!
And
yeah.
The only way she could come here was for us to get married. We talked about it for a while, so a little change in life here.
Well, gosh, I mean, how long ago was it before when you were married?
Well, I met her early on in my travels to Cuba, but we've been a couple of sorts for 6 or 7 years. Long distance, not easy, but we decided to legitimize it.
And were there any cultural differences? Are you of Spanish?
No, I'm not. My first trip was just on a whim. I wanted to get away, and I had a niece that had gone to Cuba, and she told me if I ever had the opportunity that I should take it.
Mm-hmm.
A friend's son was doing a documentary film down there in 1996, and in April of 96, I took my first trip and went 3 more times that year, sort of fell in love with the place.
Now, first of all, I mean, especially that first time back in the mid-1990s when Fidel was still in reasonably decent shape, how did you go? I mean, was it legal? How did you get there?
We went up. There were a lot of people just traveling through Canada at that time, and so I went up to Canada and got on a plane and went down for a week vacation pretty much, and I met Roberto Salas, who was a famous Cuban photographer, and he had been living in New York and went to Cuba with Fidel as a 19-year-old in 1959. And we sort of bonded, and I brought back some of his work. It's always been legitimate to buy and sell art from Cuba. So I sort of got into the art business through him buying and selling photography and art, and that allowed me to keep going back and forth.
So when you come into the States, right, I mean, granted you went through Canada, and then I guess you have to go back into Canada and
right.
into the U.S., but, I mean, do you stand on the customs line forever, or they ask you 4,000 questions?
No, generally they ask me, I tell them I was in Canada, and if they don't ask me any further questions, I don't lie to them, but I don't tell them I went to Cuba. But since that time, I've had several licenses. I've traveled under university license several times, and I now travel under a general license as a publisher. I publish a website, cuba-photo.com, and I publish the book on Corazon Press.
What is the name of the book?
The book is Cuba, Photographs by Jack Kenny. I thought up the title myself.
Well, yeah.
Pretty simple.
Very clever, very good. And before we get any further, you might as well tell us a little bit about it's a photograph book, right?
It's a photographic book, a 12 by 12 coffee table book, all black and white, 120 pages and 106 photos.
Wow.
And almost all the photo books of Cuba are color. There are pictures of old cars and architecture. So I just took the polar opposite and I do mostly people. I work on street level. I've been all over the country, so this is my look at life of an everyday Cuban in black and white. And it's been very successful. It just won an award for printing excellence and selling quite well.
And it's from Corazon Press,
Corazon,
right?
Press, yes. Now, available from the publisher, if anyone's interested.
Now, the very first time, 7 years ago that you went, what was it that you did fall in love? I mean, what specifically, if you can put it into words?
Well, I don't know exactly what it was. I had been working way too much, and I had been doing studio photography, but hadn't been. I'd been to Mexico a bit and photographed there and through the American West, but I was just inspired by Cuba. I was inspired by the people. It was not what I expected. I expected a small island with a gray cloud over it and everybody oppressed, and instead I found this most vital of places in the world. Lots of culture, lots of activity, very social.
See, Americans would have assumed that, especially 10 years ago, it was, or about 7 years ago, it was a mess.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago, actually.
Yeah, okay, 10. So, but that because there was no money and everything was embargoed, that people might have been very spirited. But they're terribly poor. They've got nothing. They're like Russia, sort of in that 70s, 80s downfall period.
Yes. Well, with the collapse of the Soviet Empire, of course, they lost their subsidy of $6 billion a year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, just prior to my first trip, was the most difficult time. They called it the special period, and food was hard to come by. Things were very tight. By the time I went, things had improved slightly, and people were pretty much taken care of. At least they were covered on the basics, so there wasn't any panic in the streets.
Well, where did they supplement the income that was lost from Russia?
Well,
was it all black market?
They turned to tourism.
Oh,
reluctantly.
Okay.
And tourism went from down the list to the number one. I think they do about $1 billion a year in tourism at this point.
Mm.
So between tourism and sugarcane and tobacco, and they'd have a lot of nickel production and other things, they've pieced together an economy again, and it's still struggling and leaves much to be desired, but at least they got out of the trouble they were in.
But is it true, I mean, now that you've been there much more recently, too, you've been going steadily over the past few years, that it's just on the brink of exploding? I mean, something over there, as soon as Castro kicks, literally,
well,
it's going to be capitalism gone crazy.
I don't think it will, in fact. I don't think that the culture will accept it. There's 11 million people there, and they've been in this system for 50 years, and I think it will be 7 to 10 years before it will look completely different than it does now, and even then it may not. The social structure is very strong. It has a lot of problems, obviously, no economic opportunity, but they have such a strong culture and cultural base. For instance, the aristocracy there would be artists and sports figures and people who they revere for other reasons than economic, and those people seem to be the upper class. They have a lot of the privileged class, so to speak, in a communist country.
Right, but if they're going to be building, if they've already built the infrastructure for tourism as their number one thing, once we normalize relations with them and everybody starts streaming in from Florida and then streaming up from Cuba, won't that make all the difference in the world?
Well, that infrastructure that you speak about is true, but it's true in a very, very limited area. Primarily, Varadero Beach is the big tourist area, and that's where all the money's being invested. And there's a few coastal cities where they're pretty much tourist areas only. Cubans don't even go there, are not allowed to go there,
mm-hmm.
only if they work there. So it's really an isolated area. Some, obviously, in Havana because of the historical value. So there's a lot of economic input in Havana. But the structure itself, the water system, the electric system, the road systems, are so far from being able to handle a full economy. It'll take years just to bring that up to par. You can't go in and just build a factory and have no power to run it and have, you know, there are other problems before they can get to that point. So I suspect it'll be a long change, hopefully a peaceful change. You know, my friends down there, I'm concerned about them with this latest episode with Fidel.
Well, do you think it would just be his brother? Do you think he could get away with
that?
Well,
no one knows what to expect from his brother, and his brother, I think, could be a figurehead leader, but probably not the brains of the outfit, so to speak. I think Alarcón, the head of the General Assembly, is very sharp. There's Laje and Roque and a bunch of others who supposedly there's a group in power right now, even though Raúl is the figurehead. But I think he's going to be mostly a figurehead and the head of the military. And no one's sure whether how he will turn things. He has had some good ideas about economic change that Fidel didn't want to do, so they sat on the back burner, but he actually may open things up. They do have low-level private enterprise there, and he may expand that, which would be the right thing to do
But you don't see, like, democracy taking hold within, like, 5 years.
Well, I don't. It's, you know, the question has always been, if there was an honest election right now, would Fidel win? And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. He's not unpopular in many areas. He's unpopular in some areas, mostly where tourists go at Havana and they hear all the complaints. But if you get away from the city, most people are pretty low-key. They're rural. They're pretty content. Their lifestyle is casual. I don't think they would want to change it for anything. So it may be that they go to a democratic system and still want to stay some kind of democratic socialism. But we won't know that until it happens, of course.
Well, I'm sure you've probably been asked this before by interviewers and Americans, certainly. I mean, when you went down there and talked, if you talked to folks about Castro, both rural campesinos and the folks who are trying to be more materialistic, capitalistic, or what have you, A, is there a sense of still being afraid of Castro or whoever's keeping him in power? Or do you really just get a general sense, people who don't like him feel free to say so, and people who do like him are genuine about it?
I think the latter, that people are, they say what they want. They don't say it loudly. I mean, I wouldn't be in a crowd and ask someone what they thought of Fidel. They wouldn't look at me like I was crazy. So there is that fear in that sense. But I think when you get people, when I spend most of my time walking the streets with my camera, talking to people, trying to get into their homes or their businesses or their schools and just sort of ambling along. So it's lowest common denominator, I like to call it. And most of the people are pretty honest and open. They'll say, no, we're tired of this, and we want this to change. And others say, you know, I like things the way they are. One man told me he just had heart surgery, and I went to the hospital, and they fixed me up. And he had lived in the States, and I said, would you go back to the States? He said, why would I ever leave this? And he pointed to the sky like it's, you know, I'm in a beautiful place, and, you know, my grandkids are safe, and my kids all have college degrees, and why would I ever want anything different? So when you think about it in that sense, some people are very happy with it.
Would you ever move there?
I would, absolutely, yeah. And someday I hope to be there. I don't think I could live within the system as it is, not on $15 or $20 a month.
Good heavens, is that really what? No.
Yes, oh yeah. Yeah, that's the average wage, I think, is about $20 a month.
All right, well, again, then let's put that into perspective. What is a gallon of milk?
In Cuba, well, they give milk free to kids under, I think, 7 years old. They get free milk every day.
Okay.
And that's the majority of the milk goes to the kids. You can buy one somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, what is café con leche? I mean...
Well, they would never... Cubans don't go to markets. They have their own markets where things are very cheap.
Oh, okay.
I can have lunch there in the Cuban economy for a quarter or 20 cents or 15 cents. If I want to. So I can move into that system. But most people wouldn't even do that. They would eat at home or with friends or family or relatives or neighbors. They tend to all share that way. So there's not the nights out, or they all get together at a friend's house and they dance and they listen to music, and they're very social. People are out all the time. The television's so limited. There's only three channels in
are
the evenings.
Government
money? Yes, of course, yeah.
Right.
Cable is illegal, although in Havana almost everyone has cable.
Really?
But
American cable, or is it a Spanish cable?
Well, it comes from satellites, and they have my wife's son is 12 years old, and about a year ago I asked what he wanted when I came down the next time, and he said Cocoa Puffs.
Oh, brilliant.
And I said, well, the funniest thing I'd ever heard, but they had gotten cable into their apartment, and so now he sees American commercials and all that. So, and he had his one box of Cocoa Puffs, and that was enough. So because of limited television, it's on weekends all day, and it's mostly movies and sports and news, and then the children's broadcasting, of course, because Fidel's big on kids. He's the father of all the children of Cuba, you know.
Oh, right, of course.
So there's,
perhaps literally. No.
Perhaps literally, yes. So people are out and they're social and they're busy. Everyone's busy. The streets are always crowded with people, and except in the heat of the afternoon, of course, it slows down a bit. But so it's an active place. And as I mentioned, arts before, my interest is in the arts. I buy and sell plastic arts and photography to subsidize my travels. And the artists are just amazing, the work they put out. And a lot of that is political and social commentary, and that's pretty free. So it's not what I expected, and I don't think it's what most people expect. The reason I started my website was to show the real Cuba, because I thought that people were not getting a look at what it was like. It was not what I expected. I expected it to be much tougher and grittier.
Right, of course.
And it was not that at all. It was music everywhere. Pretty interesting place, obviously, 40 trips later.
And people aren't starving per se. I mean, I guess every country has a starving contingent. But the folks who have to live on $10 a month are growing their own and somehow making it?
Well, they make it. They are subsidized food-wise. They get their rolls and their rice and a certain amount of meat and some food and some clothes and some shoes. And housing is free. Once you have a house, it's just yours. And
really?
There are no homeless to speak of. I'm sure there are some, but you never see them. They're pretty much, everyone's given a home. And if someone leaves or someone dies and there's no one to take over that house, they go to the next person on the list and they say, here's your house and it's yours.
No mortgage, no nothing.
No mortgage, no taxes, no nothing. You have to pay utilities, and they've gone up recently, and that's been a problem, getting pricier for electricity. So in a sense, you can live, obviously, pretty cheaply because they do it. On the other hand, there's a huge black market and several layers to the economy that don't come in under the system. Everyone has television sets, for example, and if you go to the store, the cheapest television is about $400, and you go, how do all these people have television sets?
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to ask that question. But they all do.
Yeah, because
so.
$400 is actually a lifetime salary.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah, and they're way more expensive there than here because everything's hard to get there because of the embargo, so things come the long way, so to speak.
And the person you said who had the heart surgery over there, I mean, is there health care? Is there national health?
The doctors are excellent. Health care is free, and education is free. Through any level. So obviously, if you want to be a doctor, you will be revered and respected. Your education is free. They have a doctor for, I think, every 400 people, and they're all spaced in the communities. And they have doctors. They send doctors all over Africa and Central and South America. They have free education for foreign students in medical school. If they are poor. In fact, the first U.S. student graduated, I think, last year from the Cuban Medical School at no charge.
So do you think if it weren't for the U.S. embargo, it would actually be an ideal system?
Well, it's not an ideal system. I mean, people want economic freedoms, and they don't have that. They have other freedoms, and they have other choices. My biggest complaint is people can't come and go freely. I think if they were allowed to do that, most people would leave and come back and bring things with them that were needed by the economy and by the country, and that would be a good thing. So there's a lot of problems with it, but there's a lot of good in it. So I never condemn it. And of course, I condemn more of our policy toward Cuba, which I think doesn't help anybody. It hurts the Cuban people, and it strengthens the Cuban government because they blame everything on the embargo. And I'm a U.S. citizen, so I can complain about our policy.
Of course.
I'm not a Cuban, so I have nothing to say about theirs. But I think if we change some of our policies, it would strengthen the Cuban people and weaken the Cuban government and eventually lead to a peaceful and change for the better. So, but we don't want to do that. After all these years, I guess we're not going to. Fidel's bound to die before we change. So,
well, that could be very, very
soon. Could be soon, yes. Yeah, no one. My reports from Cuba, from my friends, are all over the board. Even they don't know. One doctor friend who's very high up told me that he was fine and should be back in the limelight within a couple of weeks. And then someone else said that Chavez from Venezuela just gave a report saying that he was very critical and might not make it. So somewhere within those two is the reality of it.
Well, it's kind of funny because I remember 5 years ago there were reports about Václav Havel of Czechoslovakia, who seemed to have 25 different things wrong with him.
Right.
And totally on death's door.
Yes.
And now, I don't know, I guess he's writing plays again or something.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I much prefer Václav Havel to Fidel Castro, but still.
Yeah, Fidel doesn't write many plays, that's for sure.
No.
So, an interesting figure, you know, a fascinating guy, but I would like to see some things change. But I'd like to see some things stay the same, too. So let's hope they can keep the best of what they have. And then make some, the economic changes need to come. They need to allow more of this free enterprise. For instance, people can rent rooms and make small restaurants in their homes for tourists, and it generates quite a bit of money. But the government is so capricious that they will just come and arbitrarily close them from time to time, and so they don't give them the opportunity to flourish much.
Well, they ought to mafiaize it, take taxes out, take, you know, their cut, and let the places operate. I mean,
Something they need that income, and then once Fidel sees another line of income, for instance, from Venezuela, then he wants to cut back on this tourism income because he doesn't like that foreign influence. So rather than accumulating these different layers of economy, he trades one for another, and that's to me is the problem right now.
Is he still so scared of like the outside world at this point?
I don't think it's a fear of the outside world. I think it's just a desire to prove that he is right in his system. And I don't think he's afraid of anything. I think he just wants it to be right, and he thinks he's close enough to making it right that everyone will say, "Yes, Fidel, you were right." They won't, by the way. but I think I think I mentioned earlier the father figure, and I think that he feels he's the father of all 11 million of those people. And the bad kids he got sent off to the United States, and the good kids can stay. And that seems to be his mentality, and he wants it to work.
Huh.
He's running out of time. Hi, this is Jack Kenny, photographer. You're listening to Days Gone By with Dave Lefkowitz on WGBB.
We are talking with Jack Kenny, photographer and author-photographer of the book Cuba Photos by Jack Kenny, available through Corazon Press. Have a couple more questions for you, Jack, because
sure.
It's just so interesting to talk to you about this country that we have these set ideas about and really kind of don't even know. But I also want to talk a bit about your work as a photographer. Now, you did this book, all black and white photos, although if people go to your website, they'll see there are color photos there as well.
Yes.
So why black and white, and when do you choose black and white as opposed to color?
Well, my love is black and white, and that's my strong suit. I've always been a black and white photographer. But my first trip to Cuba, when I came back, I realized that I wanted to show the Cuba that was there, so I created my own image bank. Cuba-photo.com is an image bank of 4,000 pictures of Cuba, and they are free use to education.
Wow.
So it's an opportunity, and the only way you can run an image bank is in color these days, unfortunately. So I decided to shoot all color, and then people can print them or use them black and white or color. They were not meant as art pieces. They're just a document of the country of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And by the turn of the millennium, roughly, the Pope had been to Cuba, and the Elian Gonzalez case brought Cuba to the limelight. CNN opened a center there, and at that time I decided that my work in that area was sort of coming to an end, and I wanted to switch back to black and white and do what I love, and I was doing exhibits of my work, and then the book came as a result of I had a traveling exhibit that went to universities, starting at the University of Michigan in 2001, I think, initially. And that traveled around, and then I had requests for more things, and the book is sort of a result of that, and I stayed with black and white for the book. So it's my work of art. I may do a color book in the future, and it would be just a lighter book like Colorful Cuba or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a couple of real interesting photos on the side. There's one of this woman smoking, like, this enormous cigar.
Right.
I mean, it's beyond even phallic, because she's,
yes,
like,
yes.
78 years old.
Sure.
But you mentioned, why is she doing that?
Well, at this point, mostly the women that you see that have flowers in their hair and they're doing it for dollars.
Giant cigar she's smoking is actually...
Sure. That was, and now they're out in the old parts of Havana and they say, give me a dollar and you can take my picture. Now, most of those that I took, that was sort of prior to that, and they were out, I think, probably looking for money, but I don't pay for photos. I just take pictures of people for other reasons, so... but now, most of those, there are more and more of them, and they're just out there for, it's a tourist attraction at this point.
Yeah. And you also said on the site that basically if they work in the cigar factories, they can roll their own of any size.
Yeah.
Well,
the woman in the cigar factory is, if that's the one you're referring to, there are several pictures of women with big cigars. But she is actually famous and has been in several books, and she just rolls a huge cigar and smokes it all day long, working in the Partagas factory right behind the Capitol.
It's amazing she's lived that long if she's smoking cigars.
It is amazing.
And there's also another...
Well, she's only 21. She just looks 75.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's the wrinkles that you get from the puffing. But another photograph that is probably not quite as popular is... And you didn't even, I think, realize that you quite... What you had when you snapped the picture has to do with a goat.
Oh, yes. That's an interesting story. I was invited to a voodoo ceremony, and they said it's a demonstration ceremony for voodoo. Now, voodoo is not common in Cuba. Santeria is their West African Yoruban faith.
Mm-hmm.
Voodoo is more practiced in Haiti and the Dominican Republic, but there are in eastern Cuba, I think a couple thousand practitioners of voodoo. And this was in Havana, and a friend of mine who's with the press said, oh, they're going to have a voodoo ceremony at this pavilion in Havana. And I said, well, I'll go. And I went about 10 at night, and there were no foreigners there. Everyone there was very black, so it seemed to me that it was the voodoo influence in Cuba, which was from the eastern end of the island. Mm-hmm. And I expected it to be more open to the public, and it didn't appear to be. But they had this goat, and they were walking around. They bathed him, and they perfumed him. And I was there a couple hours, and I was sitting on the floor right in the front. And I didn't expect them to sacrifice any animals because this is a so-called demonstration. And I was sitting in the dark, and I saw the machetero, the man with the machete, come out and dance. And everyone was dancing and swirling. And my camera batteries were very low. The flash was low. And I took one picture in the dark, and I just happened to catch him just after the machete passed through his neck. So his head is not quite touching the floor, and the machetero is already out of the picture. So there's a goat standing in the middle of the room, headless, on all fours still. I'd like to say he didn't know he was dead yet. But that's a pretty interesting photo. It's got a lot of comment.
Yeah, I can imagine. And what was the purpose of that ceremony? I mean, even if it was a demonstration, but let's say it wasn't. Let's say there was an actual real voodoo. I mean, what the hell?
Well, those were sacrifices. They sacrificed chickens and goats, and that's standard in Santeria and in voodoo. Yeah. And voodoo.
No, but I mean, even the dancing and everything. Were they trying to bring rain? Were they just
no,
trying to
well,
say
I, you know,
hi
I don't
to God?
Know.
Or?
All the different, there are several different gods, and they're based on, I'm not big on my Santeria, but there are several Chango and Yemaya and all the different gods, and they all relate to different things. They're gods of the sea and of the mountains and of rain, and they have birthdays, and it's usually on one of those birthdays that they will pay homage to that god, and everyone has their own, for instance, Chango, I'm told by several Cubans, is my saint. So on his birthday, which is in December, I would, if I were a practitioner, I would have a party in his name, and you sacrifice to that god, and sacrifices are chickens and goats. So this was part of a sacrifice to one of the gods of voodoo. And honoring him, and then they cook him and they eat him. I mean, by morning he's breakfast.
Was that the strangest experience you had?
I've been to Santeria ceremonies, although that was the first goat sacrifice, so that was pretty unusual.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it's just part of it's so much a part of the Cuban culture. Almost every house, if you walk in the door, will have maybe a glass of water next to the door as an homage to their saint. And it's almost every house, even the Catholics that I know and people who don't proclaim any affiliation with Santeria seem to have maybe a cigar by the door or something by the door. On their shelf there'll be an homage to one of the saints. So
I can't imagine what saint smokes a cigar.
All of them.
St. Aloysius is walking around and he's like, God, I can use a smoke. And for the last question to Jack Kenny, photographer, what is the most precious experience or most memorable experience that you've had in all your trips to Cuba?
Well, a singular experience I don't think I can pinpoint. It's been the people right from the start. And if you see my book, you'll see it's people. I don't spend much time on architecture and old cars like most of the books on Cuba. And, of course, once I met Nyurka, who I married recently, she was a huge influence and has been great in my life. And she's a hard-working woman, works in a shoe factory all night long for her $10 a month. And she's proud and strong, and so she's a big part of it. But my daughter also goes to Cuba. She's a senior at Eastern Michigan University, and she has been 15 or 16 times.
Well, actually, you know what? Let me bring that back, though. Okay. Nyurka now, I guess, lives with you in America.
No, she's still in Cuba.
She's still in Cuba?
It will be a while.
Wow, you got to marry her and leave her there. That's like, if American men could do that,
world.
We would take that system, man. No, I'm kidding. But, no, I was going to say, what kind of culture shock would she have had?
Well, in the future, she's going to come here. We think, actually, the Cubans are, she can be released very quickly on that end. But on the U.S. side now, I've already applied to Homeland Security, and that will take about 3 months and another 3 to 5 months on immigration before they will let her come. So it will be sometime next year. And she doesn't know if she wants to live here or not. She's never been out of Cuba, and I told her it's her choice. she will come and visit and make that decision after she's here.
And actually, by the way, where do you live?
I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Michigan. So it's not like you're even in Florida just taking the boat over. You're
In fact, I drive to Toronto to travel to Cuba. I travel out of Toronto.
Man, you must pack all sorts of clothes for every trip.
Well, I take a lot more down than I do coming back.
Yeah.
All my friends want something, and once you start going to Cuba, you take stuff for everybody. And then all my friends here that know people in Cuba ask me to take things for them. So,
is it still illegal to bring in the cigars?
Yes, it is, yeah. Initially, with the university licenses that I had a few years ago, you could bring two boxes in. But now they stopped that. And the general license, which I travel under now, I can't bring anything in except art and reference materials are all legal, but nothing else. No cigars, nothing else, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, you were able to smuggle them in bottles of hair gel, and now even that you can't do.
Yeah, that's done now, too.
Oh, well. Yeah. But, Jack Kenny, it has been just wonderful and really fascinating talking to you. Just please remind people, A, what the book is and where they can get it.
The book is Cuba, Photographs by Jack Kenny. The publisher is Corazon Press. Corazon, CortisonePress.com. You can order direct from them, or it's also on Amazon.com and at select bookstores.
And just remind them where they can see your photographs, your own website again.
Cuba-photo.com has 4,000 pictures in color, and some of the black and white, and the Corazon Press has several large versions of black and white to give a good representation of the book.
Well, Jack, Cuba is libraying with you. on this program.
Well, it's a pleasure to be able to talk about my favorite place and share it with everybody else.
Thanks so much.
All right, Dave. Thank you.